You enjoying the hot weather? I love the hot weather. Because you know the cold's coming eventually anyway, right? So you won't be this way for too long. So enjoy Minnesota tropics. Right? It's tropics. You know, about 8 years ago was my birthday. And someone invited me up to Rocky Island, one of the Apostle Islands. And they say you can't swim in Lake Superior. Well, if you try, maybe you'll last about 5 minutes. And it was this particular summer that it had been like 90 degrees for weeks and weeks and weeks all over the state. So I went up to Rocky Island not knowing any better, and my wife and my kids were with me. And next thing I know, there's my wife out there in the crystal clear water. My little boy, they swam out there for 2 hours. That's how warm it was. Of course, you know, Duluth and Lake Superior would lose its pristine quality if we had that kind of temperature all the time, because people would be up there bathing in the water all the time. So anyway, you're going to get rid of the heat pretty soon. This is the third week of, believe it or not, amazing facts about God. And tonight what I want to talk with you about is this amazing fact. Believe it or not, God will always come through for you. Always. God always does what He says He's going to do. Probably 3 or 4 years ago, I had to buy a lawnmower. My old lawnmower broke. So I had to get another lawnmower. So I was debating what kind of lawnmower to get. And for those guys out here, I think mostly guys mow, but there may be some ladies here who've mowed before too. But I've been mowing since I was about 8 years old. Started with the old lawnmower, you know, that has the rotor blades on it that you push. Never mind. It doesn't have a motor on it, in other words. And you're the motor. It's just a little after the horse-drawn lawnmower. Way, way back in olden times. You've seen them in museums. So, the other kind of lawnmower you get is the kind where, you know, you turn the little choke thing or you pump the little thing and you pull the string. Now, of course, they have some electric start ones and riding lawnmowers, but I don't like the riders because it's hard enough to get exercise as it is. So, I like getting out pushing the lawnmower. Besides, my sons were going to do it and I wanted them to learn to work. I didn't want them sitting on their butt riding around our yard, you know, just loafing on the lawnmower. So, I get this lawnmower that says, guaranteed to start first time, every time. See one of those? Honda makes one. Sears Craftsman makes one. It's supposed to be these really great lawnmowers. And I'm like, you know, that's a really good thing, because for those of you that have ever experienced this, you go out and you try to start the lawnmower. You got a new spark plug in it. You got new gas in it. The oil's fine. And you're pulling that stupid rope 20, 30, 40 times, right? So I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to avoid that problem and avoid the unnecessary frustration. Give me a lawnmower that really works. So I get this new lawnmower and has this little black thing on the side. You push it 5 times, just pink, 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 pink. And then it starts first time, every time. So that first summer I had it, man, it was awesome. Worked exactly like they said it was going to work. And the lawn I was cutting at the time took 3 hours to mow. It was an acre of grass. So I'm thinking, man, this is a beautiful lawnmower. This thing hasn't caused me any problems at all. So I put it away for the winter. Next spring came, put a new spark plug in it. Any old gas that was in it, took out and pulled the string a few times, you know, to get rid of old gas. Put some brand new gas in it. And it came time to do the lawn. And it had gotten a little long because sometimes, you know, it sneaks up on you in the spring. So I went out and I did the little pump dealy-bop and had the oil checked, and I put the little throttle where it's supposed to be, and I pulled the first time. Bump, 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 bump. Nothing. Thought, okay, well, you know, it is a summer old, so it didn't keep its word this time, but I'll try it again. So I pull the thing again, and it's bump, 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 bump. 30 minutes later, I am still pulling the string. I have done everything but pick the lawnmower up and slam it into the ground. I am so frustrated. I kick the wheel. Things are coming out of my mouth that aren't very nice. And I cannot believe this pile of junk is causing me all these problems. That means, of course, I got to take it to the shop, which means the grass grows longer. And, of course, in the middle of the season, it's a terrible time to take, or the beginning, to take your lawnmower. So I took it in. The guy gave me some reason it wasn't working. And, of course, I had bought this warranty on it, so they took care of everything. So I get it back, and it works for about 2 weeks. then the rope breaks. Needless to say, that lawnmower is symbolic of often what our life feels like. Whether it's things in our lives, whether it's relationships in our lives, people and things do not always come through for us, do they? You ever been in a relationship where you were betrayed? Someone who told you, oh man, your secret's safe with me. I love you. I'm for you. I'm behind you. You can always count on me. You know, the book of Proverbs says many a person, many a man, many a woman declares their loyalty. But who can really find a faithful friend? They are rare. It is so rare to find an individual who says to you, I love you and I'm committed to you. And then through thick and thin, they live it out. I look back over the panorama of my life the last 27, 30 years, and there have been some wonderful people in my life. There have also been people who started out really wonderful, and then the next thing you know, after years of a relationship, they say some of the meanest, nastiest things you can possibly imagine, and you're scratching your head going, what happened? What happened? One of the things you're going to learn the longer that you live is that life is full of disappointments. People will often let you down. People that you love, that say you love, that they love you and that you love, let you down. But God is not like that. God defies our human experience. God always does what He says He's going to do. And He always comes through for the man or woman who puts their trust in Him and waits for Him and relies on Him. He keeps His word. For me, the last 27 years has been an exhilarating adventure. I started my relationship with Christ when I was 19 years old. That was 27 years ago. And it has been an extraordinary adventure, the different things that God has done in my life. The different times He's saved me. The different times He's come through for me just in the nick of time. I like to tell people, especially many of you in this auditorium tonight that are young and you're just beginning your life with Christ, you have an exciting life to look forward to. There are many of you here tonight, you may wonder to yourself, you know, Mark, right now I'm single and I don't have a lot of responsibilities. I have some. But what about marriage? Will God be faithful to me when I get married? Will God be faithful to bring someone to my life? What about when I have kids? Will God be faithful to me then? Or am I going to need to make sure I have a really fat bank account to take care of every possible contingency? Those are really important questions. And I can tell you from experience in 27 years of living my life, having almost finished raising 4 children, that God always comes through with His promises. He has never let me down, not once. Now, there have been times, and I've shared this with you, He's taken a little longer than I would have liked. There are times He didn't do things exactly the way I thought they were going to be. But the honest to God truth is that He has never, ever let me down. Many years ago, it was about 1981, 82, and my son Jeremy had just been born. So we had Celeste and then Jeremy. And I had this business. I was in business with a guy. We were selling these engine products, these mileage engine improvement thing. And the company that I worked for, they had this sales bonus that if you reached a certain level of product distribution a month, then you'd reach this new car bonus level and you'd get a new car. But you had to use the money for a new car. So I was working away, and my partner that I was in business with, he just had a new car. So he said, I'll tell you what, Mark, I'll take extra income, and then you take the new car bonus. I said, that's fine. That way we can do both. So I went out and got this brand new 1982 Cutlass Brougham Oldsmobile. Had all the bells and whistles, because part of the deal that in the sales business was that you were signing up new distributors, and so it was important to look mildly successful. And it wasn't me paying for it anyway. It was the new car bonus. And you couldn't take the money cash. You had to use it on a car. So I get the car. We brought Jeremy home in that brand new car. It's really the only brand new car I've ever owned. About 3 months after I got the car, my business began to nosedive. It wasn't necessarily my partner I was doing. It was just the company failed to expand its products, and it wasn't one of those repeat kind of products you used it once or twice in the life of your car, and that was it. And so it got to the point that I wasn't going to get the new car bonus, and I didn't want to, let the dealership down. So I called them on the phone way ahead of time, and I said, look, I got this brand new car. It's got 1,000 miles on it, and I'm not going to be able to make the payments anymore. My business is going under, and I don't want you to have to come and repossess this. I don't want you to have a hassle. How about if I just give you the car back and you sell it? The guy said to me, he said, well, we can't do that. He said, you can pay us to take it back. So I said, well, how much do you want? He goes, $600. I said, okay, that's fine. Put me on a payment plan. I'll pay it because I want you guys to be able to sell the car and get your money out of it. So I gave him his money back, and then the next thing you know, the business just went, there was just no more business. So here I am, father, I got 2 young children home, and I've got not a penny worth of savings in the bank, and no car. That was the only car we had. And I began to wonder, God, what are you doing with my life? You know, I'm trying to follow you. I was trying to grow in my spiritual life. I was in a pastoral training program, but of course I had to try to make a living in the meantime. And everything just fell apart. I was also running a little warehouse for this company out of my garage, and so that brought in a couple $100 a month, so we used that for food. For 3 months, I was out of work. Every day, I would go downstairs to my phone, and I would get the yellow pages, and I would look through the business section, and I would have prayer and ask God to lead me to a place that needed someone to work for them. And then I started in the A's, and I just went through asking for the personnel director, whoever answered the phone. Most places didn't have a personnel department. So I asked for the manager, the person who did the hiring. I asked if they had any opportunities for employment. See, because I couldn't drive around to look because I had no car. Every day I'd pray and I'd ask God, God, you promised in Matthew 6:33 that if I seek first your kingdom and your righteousness and go after you and try to do things the right way, that you would look out for me and my family. Right now, Lord, we're living on one boiled chicken and a bag of potatoes and a loaf of bread a week. And that's what we ate. My wife made homemade chicken soup, and we put baked potatoes after they were baked in the Cuisinart food processor, and that's what my little kids ate. That was it. 3 months later, I got this job after much prayer and much seeking. It was a job selling auto parts. The only deal was you had to provide your own car because you had a route that you had to drive. So when I went over for the interview and I told the gentleman a little bit of my experience, I said, I'm willing to learn. I believe I can learn. I believe I can do this job. He said, now, you know, you got to provide your own car. I just nodded my head and said, yes, I understand that. He didn't ask me if I had a car. He'd asked me, I'd have said, no, he didn't ask. He just said, now you know you need a car. I said, yes, I know that. But I knew at this point in my life, I need a miracle. This was on a Friday. So I got home, and a few hours later, he called and said, well, I'd like to hire you. You can start Monday morning. Again, I didn't tell him I didn't have a car. I didn't want to ruin my chances. I wanted to give God at least 48 hours to do something. Now, I had no savings, no credit card, no money, no credit history, and no one was going to give me a loan. I had no family who gave me a loan. So I went down to my basement. I spent considerable time over that weekend talking to God, going over the promises of God in the Bible. Many of them I have underlined. I said, God, I said, look, please do not toy with my emotions. I got a wife. I got 2 children. I really need this job. This is the only one. I went through the A's to the S's. This was the S company. And I've been calling for weeks, Lord, now for months. I need this job, so I'm asking you to give me a car. I'm asking you, Lord, somehow, give me a car. I need a car by Monday morning. I do not want to call and tell this gentleman, I'm sorry, I can't start. I don't have a car. Well, Sunday came. Sunday afternoon came. Sunday evening came. I'm starting to wonder, you know, Lord, I'm asking you again. I need a car. I need you to get me a car somehow. Sunday night, about 10 o'clock, the phone rang. I picked it up, and this woman was on the other end. She said, "Mark, is this Mark Darling?" I said, "Yes, it is." She said, "Well, you don't know me, Mark, but you know, we go to the same church." And she said, "I have a question to ask you. Would you like a car to use?" I said, "Excuse me?" I said, "Would you like a car to use for you and your family?" I said, "Well, yes." She said, "Well, here's the situation." She said, "I had not told, well, my business partner knew that I had put the car back to the dealership, but I didn't go around telling people, 'Hey, need a car right here. Just a car is all I need. Hey, everybody, I need a car.' You know, I didn't do that." My business partner knew that I had returned the car to the dealership. That was it. She said, "Well, I work at the university. It's right across the street from me. My car has been sitting in storage for 6 months. My mechanic told me it's not a good idea just to leave it sit there. It ought to get driven sometime. So I was wondering if you'd like to use my car. You just put the gas in it." I said, I would love to use your car." And I said, "You understand, I'll be driving it on some country roads out in the country, and I'll have to deliver some stuff in the trunk and all that." She said, "Oh, that's great. I'd like it used. That's what I'd like." So I said, "Well, could I ask you one more favor?" She said, "Yeah, what's that? Could you bring the car over tonight?" She said, "Yeah, I'll bring it over." She brought the car over. The next day, I showed up in the car, first car I'd ever had air conditioning in. Well, besides the one I returned. And God came through for me. A couple years after that, my wife and I and my little kids, we had to get into a different living situation. We were in this big house, and we were sharing it with a couple other people to, you know, make the rent cheaper. And a couple other people were moving on. One was getting married, another one was doing something else. And so I had to get into another living situation, and I could not afford to pay the kind of rent that people were asking in that town. So again, I just began to ask my wife, and I just began to pray, "God, we need you to provide a roof for our head. Whether it's a job that pays me a lot more money, Lord, or just a place to live, we need a place to go in a month." So I began to look around at, for the first time in life, at mobile homes, trailers, simply because they were cheaper than most apartments or duplexes. And I had a friend who was going to sell me his on contract. It wasn't all that fancy, and it was I could barely make the payment if we worked it out, but he said he was willing to give it a try. And out of the blue, my father shows up. Now, some of you know my father. He walked away from our family a number of years ago, basically deserted the family, left my mom with 6 kids to raise and no money. And he never sent a dime home. He's been gone now for almost 22 years. And my father, he would always taunt me about my faith. He'd always say, "Oh, you know what, Mark? Money don't grow on trees. God don't rain manna down heaven anymore, you know? You better look out for number one." He'd tell me that all the time. He would antagonize my faith whenever he saw me. And I just kept telling, Dad, God's going to keep his word to me. He always has. He's going to continue. And I'll share with you stories as he does. My father just happens to come to town this one Sunday. He calls me from a roadside truck stop. He says, "Mark, I'm passing through town. Can I come see you and your wife?" "Well, sure, Dad. Of course you can. Come on over." So I gave him directions. I hadn't seen him in quite a few years. That was about the last time my small children ever saw him. So he came over, and it was Sunday morning. We were going to go to church, so he didn't want to go. So he said, "Well, we're going to church. We'll be back so you can rest on the couch." So he's resting on the couch. I get home. He says, "Mark, some guy called, some Dale guy." I don't know a Dale. "Yeah, some Dale called about a house. He wants you to call him." So my dad's sitting over there on the couch. So I get the phone. I pick it up. And the guy answers. And I said, "Yeah, is this Dale?" He goes, "Yeah. Is this Mark?" I said, "Yeah, Dale, Mark. Do I know you?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm Dale so-and-so from church." "Oh, yeah. I kind of knew him. Didn't really know him." He says, I got a mobile home," he said, "and I was wondering if you want it." I said, "Well, man, how much you want for it?" Because I've been looking to buy one. I hadn't signed this other contract. He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry." He says, "You misunderstand." He says, "I want to give it to you. I was wondering if I could give you a house." So I'm thinking, I want to milk this for all it's worth. So I said, excuse me, Dale. My dad's now sitting up. You want to give me a house for free? My dad's now sitting up on the couch. He says, yeah, I want to give you a house for free. He said, my wife and I, we bought a double wide about 6 months ago, and I've been trying to sell this one, and it's not selling, so I just thought, you know what, I'll give it away. Could put new carpeting in it. It's got a new little portable washer and dryer. He says, you know, it isn't the fanciest thing in the world, but it's got one big bedroom and one little tiny bedroom and a kitchen and a living room. And so doing what every smart husband does before he accepts something like that, you say, can I see it first? He said, sure you can. So I got off the phone. I said, Dad, want to go see this place? He goes, hell yeah, let's go see it. So we get in the car and we're driving over. He goes, man, I don't even know why you're going to see this, Mark. Somebody wants to give you a house, you take it. I said, well, you know, Dad, I'm married. You're not anymore, you know. So I got other people to think about. And I'm open to this. And I'm open to God doing whatever he wants. But, you know, if it's roach-infested, lice-crawling, mouse-living, I don't think I'll take it. So, you got a point there. So we get over and it's got this little bitty yard. It's up in the woods. That's not the fanciest trailers you've ever seen in your life. Some of them are boarded up. So we go to this little trailer, and I walk in, and new carpeting, and I look around, and the sink works, and the washer and dryer work, and it's not a dive. I've lived in a lot worse. I said, you know what, Dale, I'd love to take it. Not only did God give my wife and I a house that we lived in for 3 years, and we have wonderful memories, we were able to reach a number of our neighbors for Christ. But it was $120 less than what I'd been paying sharing the other house. So God not only gave me the house, but gave me a $120 a month raise. I could stand up here tonight and share with you story after story. Like when I first moved here to the cities from that trailer to become a pastor, start a church with a close friend of mine named Brent. And I'd come up 4 weekends in a row looking for a place to move my family. I could not find a place. See, my wife and I, we were praying very specifically. We wanted a two-bedroom house with a finished basement, with two fireplaces, with a garage, with a large yard for our children to play in, all for less than $550 a month rent. Now, my friends, some of them I knew up here that they were going to join the church, said, you're crazy. You won't find it. That's insane, Mark. I said, well, let's just be insane a while, and let's pray, and let's see what happens. The last weekend I'm able to come up. I'm sick. I went out with some friends on that Saturday night here that were going to help us start this church, and I got food poisoning. The next morning I had to go look at this house, and I was white as a ghost. Pulled up in the driveway, I couldn't believe it. It was this two-bedroom brick home with a full finished basement, two fireplaces, an acre of land, 50 trees on the property. The basement was all that knotty pine siding. I'm just looking in the window because I couldn't get in. And they went a $525 a month rent for it. I couldn't believe it. I went that day, filled out my reference forms because they had to check my references, went home not knowing whether or not I'd get it. A week later, the lady called me. She's lived in California all these years. Her name's Virginia. She's become like a second grandmother to our family. And we lived there for 13 years. God has always, always, always come through for me. When I was a young man, I did not have money to save for my children's college. That wasn't a problem for God. All of my oldest children have been able to go for free. Simply because in this state, unbeknownst to most people, if you skip your junior and senior of high school and instead take it at college, the state pays for it. All of them qualified. All of them got at least their AA. They can move on other avenues if they desire. I could tell you the story of minivans. I could tell you of God providing my children spouses. I could tell you one story after another, but I want to read to you a couple of Psalms that emphasize what I'm sharing with you tonight. Psalm 57, verse 2, I cry out to God Most High, to God who will fulfill His purpose for me. He will send from heaven to save me, rescuing me. My God will send forth His unfailing love and faithfulness. Psalm 105. Give thanks to the Lord and proclaim His greatness. Let the whole world know what He has done. Sing to Him, yes, sing His praises. Tell everyone about His miracles. Exalt in His name. O worshipers of the Lord, rejoice. Search for the Lord and for His strength and keep on searching. Think of the wonderful things He has done, the miracles that He has handed down. O children of Abraham, God's servant, O descendants of Jacob, God's chosen ones, He is the Lord our God. His rule is seen throughout the land. He always stands by His promises and the commitments He makes to 1,000 generations. You know, as I look back over the years of my life, I would say the single most important comforting thing, the thing that gives me my hope and my strength and my confidence for tomorrow, is knowing that God absolutely will always come through for me. And God will absolutely always come through for you. I don't have a special in with God. God loves and cares for you as much as God loves and cares for me. The only difference may simply be that when things got really tough and I was sweating bullets, that instead of taking my life into my own hands at that point, I left my life in the hands of God. That is the biggest difference between my father and I. My father and I, our lives parallel, almost identical, circumstantially, and the working of God in our lives. When I was but 1 year old, my father had come to know Christ. He was 23. We lived in California. My father was a boxer. My father was going to be a professional boxer. But in those days, you didn't make much money in the welterweight division. And I used to go run with my father around the track when he was training. And during the day and the evenings, he was a welder, learned to weld in the Air Force in Korea. And God miraculously intervened in my father's life. He turned his life over to Christ, and he became a revolutionary man. He was the most loving father that I could have ever had for the first 11 years of my life. My dad would come home, and he would read his Bible to us, and he would ruffle our hair and give us a kiss. And I mean, my life was good. And I remember when I was 3 or 4 years old, my father and mother would take us to the Skid Row missions in L.A., Los Angeles, California. My father would share with the winos and the derelicts. My mother would play the piano, and my father would put on a little service, and he led many of his friends to Christ. My father didn't have a high school education. He only went through the 6th, 7th grade. And lo and behold, we came on some financial difficulties. My father just got this really good job. He and my mom had been saving a little money for a house. So they bought the house, and he got this new job, and he worked there for 3 months. He'd been working about three jobs. He got this new job, and after the third month, he went to work one morning, and all the doors were chained shut, and there were signs that the IRS had shut them down because they weren't paying their taxes. My father lost, at that time, the best job he ever had. I was about 7 or 8 at the time. I did not realize, because I was so young, what that could do to a man and the test of his faith and the crisis of faith. But my father, he didn't pass the test. See, God gave me the identical same test at the identical same age with the identical same amount of children. But my father, that's when my father began to develop his philosophy of, you know what? No one else will look out for you, Mark. You got to look out for number one. Now, at first, it wasn't blatant. It wasn't overt. You didn't see it. It was just underneath the surface. My father moved us all back to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He and another guy opened up a welding business, and the welding business went out. And then he did something else. Then he did something else. And over the years, my father became more bitter and more bitter and more bitter. You know why? Because he took his life back into his own hands. I'd be the first one to tell you over the 27 years of my life, there have been many tempting moments in my life to say, you know what? Screw you, God. Screw you. You're not coming through for me. You're not doing what you said you would do. There have been plenty of scary moments. But that's all part of the adventure. And every time, I've just dug back into the Word of God. I've clung on to those promises. Some of them I've been clinging on to now, the same ones for 27 years. I've got some oil-stained little verse cards at home, and I go over them and over them. I pull them out. I've saved them all. And I just want you to know that if you decide in your life to trust God, really trust God, God will come through for you. It's only a matter of time. He will always keep His word to you. Let's bow our heads for a word of